Good evening, everyone. Happy quarantine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Get the Fork Out. This week, I'm very excited. We have a cool guy. His name is Jamie Taylor from the Greener Greens Company, and he is going to go into us, well, talk to us about vertical farming, and but not just vertical farming, which on its own is interesting, but he's going to talk about how it pertains to yacht chefs and maybe actually getting us custom things grown for us. And we're going to kind of start there and see where we go. Hey, Jamie, welcome to Get the Fork Out. How are you doing?
Yeah, really happy to be here, Brennan. Thanks for the invite again. I know I've thanked you offline, but yeah, cool to meet you. We've been chatting offline and you know, I've been getting involved with watching as many of your previous episodes as possible, you know, from wine suppliers based in, you know, originally on Teves and other really cool chefs. So yeah, really cool to be part of this.
Hey man, yeah, happy to have you on. We have a mutual friend, Mikhail Swindles. So to those watching, that's how Jamie and I got introduced. And you're actually the first person that I've interviewed that I haven't met yet. So this is kind of new ground for me too. And yeah, Mikhail introduced us. And as soon as he kind of mentioned what you were doing, I was like, that's going to be great. Like, I think the community is going to want to hear about that. So tell us about, I guess, well, maybe just give us your background too. Like, tell us about what you did before this venture and then how you got into it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, yeah, it's kind of that first date scenario, right? We've not really got to know each other too well. So yeah, look, I mean, you mentioned Mikhail. He's probably a good place to start in terms of my story, really. I've always had a passion for cooking. It was somewhat bestowed upon me at a young age of about 16. I left school, secondary school, a little early. And similar to Mikhail, we both attended the same catering and hospitality course at a college in Bath in the UK. We did that, both did that for a couple of years. He finished his kind of full course. I left. He went on working in kitchens. I think he went to a local restaurant in Bath called Tilly's. I mean, you know, he'll tell you his story on his video. I went on a different path. So I joined the army, the British Army at 18, you know, infantry regiment. So I was in the Grenadier Guards, you know, with the bearskin hats outside Buckingham Palace.
Really?
So, yeah, so I was a Queen's Guard. I went to Afghanistan in 2007. Was in the army till about 2011. So yeah, did some pretty cool stuff there. That was quite a while ago.
That you did. Those are podcasts on their own, just to talk about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, me and Mikhail were still quite tight then because he was based in London. I think he was at Devonshire Terrace. And I was based in Wellington Barracks in Victoria, just next to Buckingham Palace. So we'd kind of meet up and go to the gym together, you know, when it would allow. So we always remained pretty tight, yeah. I went on to set up a video production company in Bath, did that for a little while. And I've kind of just moved in and out of different roles, predominantly, you know, I went into a bit of financial services type stuff for about 3 years. I was a currency broker, effectively offering like currency risk management for businesses with currency volumes of, you know, over certain thresholds. And so that was all quite cool, but also corporate and soul destroying at the same time. So, you know, it's, I did that for a while. And yeah, you know, just speaking with Mikhail and looking at the type of stuff he buys, the type of stuff he uses, and watching the development of his food and the refinement of, you know, just the decoration side of things. I was really interested in thinking like, hey, what is that? What's going on that plate that makes it look so cool? And that kind of led me on to think, where's it from? How is it grown? How is it sourced? And then I kind of stumbled upon vertical farming back in 2019. And yeah, we've kind of been going for the past 12 months in sort of deep R&D. You can see one of the grow units behind.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Where are you? But, first, where are you in the world?
So I'm in a place, city of Bristol in the UK. So it's southwest of the UK, and I'm kind of collaborating with a university in the region, the University of the West of England. So you know they're really kind of forward thinking in terms of their engineering, their development of new technologies and innovative solutions. They've got a big push to be carbon neutral by 2025. And this is the most carbon neutral way to grow any produce, right? So there was natural alignment there. So we've got a baby unit, a baby 4 meter squared unit stacked up. But we've got bigger space. I think I sent you some pictures offline and
Yeah, they look incredible. Why don't you talk me through some of those pictures? Because I'm just going to edit them in.
Yeah, so you know we've got it's better if I explain what the system is and how it works, right? Because
sure,
I mentioned to you that we're using aeroponics, for example.
Yeah.
You know, indoor units they typically grow with hydroponics. Hydroponics is quite a common thing in the world, especially with indoor growing, and it's kind of the heritage of where indoor growing began. Hydroponics compared to aeroponics is a big difference, right? So what we use here, our unit, it produces a mist rather than a continuous cycle of water to deliver nutrients to the roots. It's basically aeroponics is a method of growing plants without soil. So instead, the roots are suspended and they hang in the air, and they get irrigated with nutrient-dense mist rather than the continuous flow of water, as hydroponics works. And the benefits are quite considerable, really, over hydroponics. So the roots works better. They've got a greater access to oxygen, and that results in a healthier plant root stock, and it gives us significantly faster crop growth rates. So it means that, we can really expedite that grow cycle by, not through any ways of adding anything to the plant, like things to boost the grow cycle. It's just the fact that it's getting more oxygen and it's getting the nutrients delivered through a mist rather than the continuous flow of water allows that growth rate to be expedited.
Interesting. So it's more efficient. It's a faster way to grow things. So
yeah,
that's one pro over hydroponics.
Absolutely. Yeah. And compared to hydroponics, it uses about 70% less water and all of the water is fully recycled. So, it uses about 95% less water than outdoor farming. But over hydroponics, it's about 70% less water. So we don't have any pesticides or harmful chemicals. There's no fertilizer runoff into waterways. And this system is super efficient. It recycles the water. So the nutrient mist comes from these atomizers. It fogs the roots. They hang through like milk trays, and we use as a grow media we use this recycled carpet. So that's recycled. We germinate the seeds in like an old milk tray. I've sent you some pictures, I think, with the roots all hanging through, right? So the roots hang through, we take it out, we cut it, and they're good to go. So yeah, it's a pretty efficient system. And we've been big advocates of aeroponics since about 2019. So yeah, that's kind of the system, really.
That's incredible. So with your work with the university, are they kind of with you in this? It's like, this is clearly the future. Hydroponics, of course, is still viable and still possibly what humans might need for the future, but it sounds like aeroponics is now next level up in terms of efficiency. How does it compare in terms of cost versus like hydroponics and soil?
It's a good question. I think it depends what we call cost. I'm a big advocate of having a green business, right? We're called Greener Greens for a reason. This unit, because it's really modern, the newest LED lights, for example, these LED lights use significantly less power to run than the older halogen lights and things like that. So the whole system, electricity wise, is super low cost to run. And the water is even cheaper because it's recycled. So we fill up the butt to run each kind of modular unit that gets recycled. The nutrients that we use just a tiny bit of ionic hydrogrow nutrients, which is kind of super, super low as well. It's all organic, right? There's no pesticides in it. The only other thing that goes into the water is the pH balance to get the perfect pH level that the plant needs. So the cost wise there is really low compared to hydroponics. I'm not sure. I guess you'd have a higher water bill because you'd be continuously using water because it's a continuous flow. But other than that, it would probably cost the same, right? But the cost environmentally, I think, is a really important thing. What these grow units are, they're modular. I've said that word a few times, right? What we have, we've got like, if you imagine an old shipping container, a big ISO container, right? You convert one of them in the inside with 24 meters of this. So that's a 4 meter grow unit. It's 1 meter wide. So if you imagine we have 12 of them inside a big kind of ISO container, we can drop that anywhere in the world. And the benefit of this is, the benefit is the cost of carbon associated with food delivery, because, you know, if you're going to order your things like nasturtiums, your sorrel, your flowers, whatever micros it is you're getting in, you could be ordering it from America, from the Netherlands, you know, and that cost for delivery is high on the planet, right? And
it is.
I think we're at a time in the world where everybody needs to give a shit about the planet, whether it's, you know, where you're getting your produce from or how it's grown. So we're just trying to kind of bring that to the market, but more importantly, focus on what you guys want and then getting that to you with the shortest kind of travel time as possible.
Yeah, I watched a couple of things on it last night, and it seemed fascinating, the idea that, you know, the yachting part aside, but even like a high-end restaurant could have these modular units, like right outside the restaurant. And even in the city, that was the incredible part. It was like, you didn't have to like knock down a building, have an open lot next to your restaurant to start a farm. You could grow your own modular stuff there. So, I mean, maybe talk to us about how you're going to get that into yachting, and what advantages do you see to people like me and people like Mikhail and other yacht chefs that are, you know, like we're always on the run, but we do kind of always want certain things, and we're always moving.
always moving is a really good way to put it for you guys. I think one thing about, you know, speaking with Mikhail all the time is I coined it as being reactive. You guys seem to have to be really reactive, right? You might be having guests on at short notice. You need to get some really good produce, and you need it fairly fast, right? So that kind of may limit your choice in where you procure your stuff from. How we want to get it to you and the benefits. I think you made a really good point just quickly about, you know, you said about the city stuff and maybe restaurants having their own growth space. I look at it as urban regeneration, right? We could dump one of these, well, not dump, you know, strategically place one of these 24
meters. I like
meters.
The familiarity with it. You're like, you just dump them. I like it.
Yeah. so we can drop one of these shipping containers on a big concrete car park or in some big docks, right? And for me, that's classed as urban regeneration. It's, you know, agriculture, farmable land. I think in the whole world, it's something like the livable land mass on Earth is like 1% of the planet's coverage, right? If you look at the water, the glaciers, the habitable space, it's like 1%, right? Which is habitable. And a really high amount of that is agriculture, and that is land-based farming for, you know, live foods, whether it be cattle, whether it be for growing things. So that space is really, really small, and it's only going to get smaller as the world and population grows, right? So I see this as urban regeneration. We can put a farm anywhere. And as long as we can create the stuff that people want at the quality that people want, I feel like it should kind of really take off. getting it to you guys and getting what you want, I think that's the next stage. You know, we've been in R&D for about 12 months. What I mean by R&D, it's a crap couple of letters to explain. We've just been working on growing and trying different crops out. So we've been researching, you know, I speak a lot to Mikel to get to know what he wants, what type of produce there is that he likes to be available. We can never replicate sort of wild rocket, right? Because that you could get in a farmer's market in France, you know, that stuff is grown locally and it's cut and it's sourced. So maybe we couldn't produce that because maybe the altitudes and the soil and things maybe add to the flavor. But from what I've seen and from the taste test that we've done, we see it as fairly the same. But what we want to do is enter the market and get some stuff out to you guys, you chefs, and get your feedback on how it tastes, how it sits on the plate, and how you'd like it to look, I think is a really important point. Because what we're doing, you know, being fairly new to your world, I'm fortunate enough to be working with a London-based company called Opus. They're a provisioning company for super yachts. They specialize in sort of high quality produce from a supply network that they've developed. It's two guys that would typically supply to three Michelin star restaurants. It's a guy called Matt Hewlett and a guy called Neil Snowball. They met at the Fat Duck restaurant in the UK, and Neil went on to be head chef at Vitruvius, which is a Gordon Ramsay, I think it's a two star, forgive me if it's not, in London. And Matt was head chef at the Ledbury. And you know, they've got really good connections, and they're going to help me get this stuff logistically out to the chefs that need it, which is great. So we're really fortunate there. But more importantly, I'm using them for the feedback on this produce, for the taste.
That's incredible.
And everything like that. Yeah. So we're geared up to make it for you guys and what you want.
I really like the idea.
That's how we're
going to
do it.
No, I'm just as excited to have you on now as before we even started talking, if not more so. Like as you're, I'm writing stuff down on my hand just because I want to ask you questions as you're talking. when you said urban regeneration, right? Like, I've always thought about if you made being environmentally conscious profitable, right? I mean, humans are motivated by basically fear or money. I don't want that to be the case, but that kind of is the case. That's how we go through our existence on this planet as it stands right now. So to get to my actual point was like, maybe there's some sort of like tax structure geared towards the term of urban regeneration. And, you know, these things can cost even less compared to, and take some of the pressure off soil farming and the planet and all of you and us purchasing these things that are quite local, that are in the city, where you're cooking, where you're eating. I think it's a fantastic idea. It takes, like you said, all that kind of carbon just washes that carbon right off the stuff that you're eating, because it didn't come from Holland, it didn't come from Rungi Market in Paris, it didn't come from Miami, it's just from right there. And you talked about the rocket, and maybe it doesn't taste as good. It's like, we kind of just can't keep doing what we're doing. We have to make some sacrifices somewhere. Obviously this stuff is going to taste good, but I don't know where love the conversation and where this might lead humanity to. Not just what you're doing, which is incredible, but just the idea of it, I find fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate our feedback. And I think we're all the same. I think, like I said earlier, you know, we're all at a stage, I think, just in the planet, the whole attitude is shifting, right? To electric cars, to just doing something in a more positive way. And there's a triple bottom line, it's called, that we're trying to operate to, which is planet, people, and profit. You know, if you take care of the planet, you take care of the people, the profit should materialize. And, you know, I'm not going to go corny and say, yeah, I'm like David Attenborough and I just want to save the planet, because at the end of the day, I'm here to run a business, right? But if we can do it in a sustainable way, if we can operate carbon neutral, like we've been looking at packaging, there's some awesome companies out there, people like Nopla, N-O-T-P-L-A. They're doing this crazy stuff with seaweed. So they've kind of ran a partnership with a food delivery service called Just Eat, where they've got like these food takeaway boxes, but instead of it being the cardboard being wrapped in plastic, it's wrapped in like a seaweed membrane that is 100% biodegradable. So yeah, it's not this, you know, biodegradable packaging that actually still goes to a landfill and is not really recyclable. Like this stuff, yeah, you could just literally chuck it in the sea effectively. I mean, you know, we wouldn't promote that, but you know,
I know what you mean. So, you're just using it as an example. Like that's how safe it is.
Yeah. And we're kind of striving at every point to be more sustainable. Yeah.
I was working on a business plan with a friend of mine. We didn't really go anywhere. That she kind of went a different direction completely, and I didn't want to do it on my own, and it was her idea. But for a while, I was doing research on single use. What's the next single use thing? Because it can't be plastic, and single use isn't going to go away ever. Obviously, it's sanitary. It's convenient. There's this cool company, I can't remember the name right now, I'll tell you when I remember it, but they make a lot of things, but one of the shopping bags out of cassava, and you can literally dissolve it in water and drink it afterwards. There was also, they were making, you know, remember how computers used to come with these huge styrofoam blocks to protect it on the corners? They're growing that out of mushrooms in like 6 days. Like not only just stuff that just... How cool is that? Like, yeah, chuck it in the landfill. Yeah. It's going to make the landfill better. Chuck it anywhere, and it's going to add rather than take away or leach horrible shit into the soil. And I just think those concepts, like rather than, oh, don't use plastic and, of course, get rid of straws and bring your own or any of that shit. But what's the next single use that can actually make the earth better? I mean, because single use won't go away. I guess that's my point. Like, rather than ditching single use, There's other resources out there for us. Hopefully, I hope you find one, because I would love that, because that's a great story to tell. Even if I'm a chef presenting to billionaires on a charter, it's like, yeah, this stuff comes like this, comes in this packaging. It's awesome. It comes in the seaweed packaging. You want to see the packaging? They'll be like, yeah, I bring it out. They'll see the name of your company. Sold, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's our issue there has been the shelf life. Because, you know, like you said, you guys have to be so reactive. You get the stuff, chuck it in the fridge, and you need to go. Yeah. So it's how do we have the packaging that has the shelf life to meet your needs if you're out, you know, for 7 days or longer, you know, because you need to keep it fresh and the packaging needs to last. So, that's something that we're really focused on.
You mean like growing it in the packaging?
No, so just I mean the delivery stuff for me is always just like when Mikhail sends me the photos of the packaging that he gets, you know, like a big crate and that's in a box and it's got the cool gel packs and it's got the wrapped stuff and all of that gets thrown away and there's at the end of it like a little plastic pot that goes in the fridge, right? And it's that for me was kind of one of the things, but the other thing is how do we keep it tasting good? Because if you have to have something that stops it getting, you know, moist and wilting in there, like the gel, is that going to take the flavor away? I mean, what's taking the flavor away from this stuff? Because I think it's in delivery. I think if you taste it here when it grows, you know, if it's wasabi rocket, it's strong, right? And but I think it's the packaging, it's the delivery. So if we can be closer to the source of consumption in the first place, we remove some of that. But then when you store it, does the fridge kill it? You know, do the fans in the fridge kill it if it's in a certain type of wooden crate or, there's some of the things that we're thinking about.
I think that's on the chef, though. It's cool that you're thinking of that, but it's up to us to store it and keep it alive. Like microgreens don't last forever as they are. And there's a cool WhatsApp group that Mikhail is a part of too, and a bunch of other savages. It's such a cool group of chefs that know what they're talking about. And there's a back and forth between like when you get stuff, microgreens, do you wash them? Do you want them washed before you get it? And the back and forth, because it all pertains to shelf life. Like unwashed, for those that don't know, it lasts a lot longer, but then you got to wash it before you use it. Whereas like you got to wash it before you use it anyway, but And I think that's what you're talking about, is like, how long can the chefs rely on this stuff? Because as you probably know through Mikhail, it's like, all right, tomorrow we're going to leave the harbor and we're going to go left to Italy. And then, oh shit. All right. And tomorrow we're going to leave the harbor and go right to Spain. Okay. Well, all my shit's going to Italy. And then you got, and I like how you use the word reactive. I think that's very accurate, because you're always in the shit. It's always changing, man.
Yeah, it's probably a different, you know, I'm speaking to you as somebody that's just purely external from your industry.
Right.
Most of the people I think have on your channel have been within the industry or are in the industry, you know. And
yeah, you're right.
You know, a lot of these things are technically conceptual to me, but I think it's a nice refreshing way to look at it and communicate it. You know, it just, you guys are, I think you're worked as hard as you physically can be and as mentally as you can be. And, you know, Mikhail's kind of, I've had a chat with him and he's like, yeah, I was supposed to have some stuff here, but now it's in Italy and I'm in here, or we're going to Turkey, or like, and I was like, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I don't know, I'm just going to sort it out. And, you know, it's like having the headaches of a kitchen, which I've only got a little bit of experience for, but that kitchen's moving and the whole world's moving around you as well, right? So how do we land on a moving target? That's the issue for me, looking at it from a logistics point of view.
We spoke briefly and I didn't want to get into it on the phone because it's just better if we do it now, but you linking up with, I think you mentioned Petrus or any of the other
Opus,
sorry, got my wines, yeah. Both wines. the provisioning companies, like they're the ones that are going to get your product around. Like, I wouldn't even worry about it. I would just worry about like the product and the packaging, and then after that, they're your arteries to get the stuff to us, and their logistics, they're so good at it. Like, I've had a lot of conversations recently, either on the podcast or in person, where like, we're fucked without provisioners. Our job, like you said, it's demanding, and just don't even try to be a yacht chef if you don't absolutely love solving problems, because that's your day is just a stack of problems. And the provisioners, without them, screwed. If I had to go shop for what I cook, if I had to physically go out and get it, like, what am I gonna do? I'm on an anchor. I have like a multi-month charter. Like, I can't leave the boat. Like, so I can't. The reason I'm saying that is to stress to you how important they are to us, and they are logistics ninjas. It's amazing what they do.
Yeah,
worth every time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Like I said to you, I'm here to learn as much as I am to educate about what we do here. And I think you mentioned something earlier about creating something that is bespoke for you guys, right? And why this next stage of our, you could call it alpha testing if we're kind of speaking in software terms, but you know, what I'm saying is, if I sent you, let's say, some pea tendrils, right? Just something really generic, and you got a couple of boxes and they got to you and you're like, Jamie, look, these are crazy. They're all wispy. Yeah, they look shit on the plate. This would look good in a cafe with a side salad, but these don't work on my plate, right? So I'd say, okay, Brennan, what do you want? And you say, okay, you know, around 5 centimeters. These are about 10 centimeters. Not that you have a ruler, but you know what I mean? You're like half the size. So yeah. what we can do, the germination time is the same, so turning the seeds into little sprouts, but the grow bed time, this is all automated with software. So through a software, I tell each grow bed what's growing in each rack, right? So I can say, we've got Brennan's pea tendrils here, but he wants them smaller. So we can change that grow bed time from 10 days to 5 days. So it only grows half the size. Yeah. So rather than 10 meters, around 5 centimeters. And I can rename that Brennan's pea tendrils. So every time you order through me, you can get the exact size that you want every time. Like,
that's cool.
You know, and that's where we want to be. We want to be at a level where we have individuals, because everybody's got their own unique cooking style, right? I look at Michaela, I look at your food, I look at my cousin's food, and it's all different, right? People have different styles, and you know, we want to be able to facilitate that rather than you getting a big batch, because it's value optimization, right? If you get 100 grams of pea tendrils, I'm talking about these like they're super desirable, but you know, if you get 100 grams of it and you only want to use 50 grams of it, that's just, what's the point? You know, like, great, we get some sales and we sell more weight, but I'd rather sell two different packages at half the weight and it be exactly what you want and need. So it's not, you know, saving you guys money, it's saving us the produce, it's saving the waste, saving our cost on seeds, it's saving everything. And that's where we want to be.
I think that's an interesting, I love it. I love the idea. And as you were, you reminded me of the fact that what you said, like, we all have our different styles, but which is true, but we're also cooking for different people from different countries. So I'm talking about charter boats where it's not private. You know, you don't have the same nationality coming over and over again. I don't know why I focus on charter boats, just I guess because that's all I work on. But so if I have a Russian charter come up, I'm going to want like the most banging dill you could ever imagine, you know, like things like that, that would be like ethnic to what I know these people are going to enjoy. And then I can tell a story about Jamie and about his grow farms. And I love it. Like, I think that's, if you have guests that like that sort of thing, and you gotta judge the room. Sometimes they don't want to hear that shit, but if they do, they're like, what? You had this grown for us. Like, it's awesome. They're just, it's another level of service that we, you know, you and I are giving to them that they probably don't even get at a three Michelin star. You know, that's just kind of the personal touch that I think it goes a long way, and I'm into it, man. I think a lot of chefs would be, I think it's a really cool thing you're doing, both because you want to keep it green and because it's just a fantastic idea for chefs.
Cool. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. No problem. So you were telling me about where your things are located, because you're in the UK now, but I think you were talking about having something near Cannes or Nice or somewhere closer to where the yachts are based at.
Yeah. So we've got a few ideas for locations. You know, you've got things like marinetraffic.com, you know, the website where it shows you historical yacht movements, and we you know, I've had a little glimpse into that world and kind of had a look at the data.
That was clever.
The data has been a bit skewed, right, over the past couple of years or whatever, well, because of COVID, but looking further back, we can get an idea of where the movements are and where people might be. But again, you know, the world's always changing, and we want to be reactive as possible. So what we want to do, like I said, is over this next sort of 6-12 months, is do that kind of alpha testing, see where you guys are, see what's wanted, you know, see where we're needed, and be flexible enough to be there. Because, hey, you know, setting up in France, I know, is notoriously a challenge with the tax issues and things like that, right? And I don't even know if they want UK businesses going over there with Brexit now and all of that stuff. So it might be logistically challenging, but if that's where it's needed and that's where the majority of people are, then, you know, we'll pay to do it and we'll pay to be there, because that's our motto, right? The planet, the people, the profit. So I think it'll all come. But we want to understand where you guys are, where you need us. And you know, it might be super difficult if you're somewhere up the road, if you turn right, like you said, and you go up somewhere, it might be super difficult to get that from France up through a certain place, right? But if we're in another place, you know, like Parma or, I don't know, in Spain or Barcelona or something, it might be easier to go down and to go up. Whereas in France, it might be difficult to go all the way down. You know, we've just got to work it out. From there, so we've got a couple of ideas. We've been speaking to a few people regionally, in different countries. We're just kind of, we're coming to you guys, and we're hopefully going to bring you some nice stuff, and in return you're going to tell us what you want and where you are, and we're going to be there in the future.
That's epic. And I think hopefully people that are watching this that want to be part of it, as in part of the kind of the chain of getting the stuff to the chefs, I think they'll chime in with some ideas. I think the more you talk about this to anyone, the more ideas you're going to get on how to figure it out. If you did want to, let's just keep using Cannes as an example, what would that look like to set up shop there? Would it be in like shipping containers? Would you buy an industrial warehouse? What are you thinking? What's your kind of plan?
So there's a few considerations in location. We need to be away from any bugs, right? Because we don't use any pesticides. So if you get bugs come in, you know, normally if I'm in here, I'm in like some bright white wellies with a lab coat, you know, the lab coat with a mask on with these
you should have done it like that.
Yeah, man. I'll send you a terrible picture, but it looks a bit like people say it looks a bit like Breaking Bad, you know. I was going to get some yellow suits or something. We're not, honestly, we're not.
But we can if you want to order some. Just getting back.
What you want, where you are, yeah, that's our motto. we couldn't really be in the middle of a field. I think as well, to promote the urban regeneration, being somewhere in a concrete, pretty kind of metropolis place would be beneficial. Also, it's the energy provider. So here in the UK, there's a company called Octopus Energy. They're a fairly new energy company on the market, but they give preferential rates to vertical growers, and they use green energy. So they're getting this stuff in a really, really conscious way, and they're giving preferential rates to people like me. So we want to make sure at least we're able to connect with an energy supplier that is using green energy, for example, right? And then you've got to think logistically, if we want to get to Cannes, Nice, Antibes, Saint-Tropez, Monaco, wherever it might be, let's say we're just focusing on that area, you know, where's geographically good to get to all of them in the shortest period of time to reduce the delivery journey. So you can hear the unit. It's filling up in the background.
I have an idea. The best place to put it is out in the ocean. And then you can just get it to us in the harbor, because south of France in the summertime, the traffic is bullshit. Like, you feel like you're Mumbai or something. You're like, oh, you could get nothing done. And of course, the streets are medieval and about this wide, so you just can't do shit. But I would park it offshore and just have dinghies. Drone deliveries, man. That's the future.
Hey, maybe you should head up our logistics strategy. It sounds like you've got some cool ideas.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Yeah, I can fly a drone. That's the way.
Cool. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. What's some of your... When do you want to start this thing? When do you want to kick this off? I know you said you want to get out to some chefs and... see what we think, and I think that's a good idea, but when do you want to kind of, you know, put the pedal down and start, you know, unleash this business on the world and maybe start making a profit as well?
You know, I mean, the coming months, really. Your world is very seasonal, right? Are we about to go over to St. Martin's what are we going to do? Where are we going to be?
That is your niche. Now that we're talking about that, I don't mean to interrupt you. I apologize, but like,
no, please do.
That is the issue. Like, so now everyone, there's two main sources in the Caribbean in the wintertime. One is Chef's Garden out of the US, which is great. And the other one is Holland, which just, the Dutch just do consistent shit year round. You can count on it. It lasts forever. It's awesome. And the reason, the connection with St. Martin is the Dutch half, right? One half is French, one half is Dutch. So you get KLM flights in every day, easy. But having something on St. Martin, that would be a different story. That would be a completely different story. Or even better, Antigua, because most of the boats are in Antigua after Hurricane Maria basically flattened St. Martin. I think they're still kind of picking up the pieces after that. But Antigua is kind of, I guess, what's turned into the bigger port. There's still shitloads of boats in St. Martin, don't get me wrong, but Antigua is kind of where the boats hang out, even when guests are on board. That would be sick, man, if you could grow something there.
Yeah, well, we can grow it anywhere in the world, right? Because we create our own environment. We're getting there. It's been a long road already, right? So we're getting some initial batches out in the next couple of weeks of some stuff. We've already had lots of people tasting it locally and local restaurants because, you know, that's important for us. But the kind of the next stage of it is where you guys are now. So, yeah, end of this year for sure. And then next year, summer season, med as well. So it's, yeah, hopefully we're gonna progress, but we want to look after some London restaurants as well and some people in the UK, not just London, obviously, like, you know, all the different places in the UK with the cool restaurants. So yeah, we're kind of trying to take care of our own backyard and clean that up. Because I was chatting to a yacht chef a restaurant head chef in Bath the other day, and they order in from Holland, all their micros. I'm like, hey, we're growing like 9 miles away from you, right? Like, so it's, you know, we've kind of kept it to a select few, but there's a lot of appetite. And yeah, I think this thing started off for you guys, and that's kind of where I'm keeping it. But I do want to treat people well here, and also treat the country well, because England's got some pretty ambitious targets for carbon neutrality and all of that stuff. So I think we can fit in nicely locally as well as internationally.
That's awesome, man. I love hearing statements like that. I've always dreamed of one day when being environmentally conscious would be profitable. It has to be in order for it to exist. No one's going to do it out of the goodness of their heart. They just won't. It's just, that's the reality of the human experiment thus far, is that it has to be done with money or fear involved. And I think that's so cool. Governments are actually taking the right steps finally to hopefully reverse some of the shit that the planet's going through. Bad, man.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's hard because, you know, I was watching, this is a really off piece, but I was watching about, you know, cryptocurrencies are all the talk at the moment, right? And it's talking about just Bitcoin farming uses as much power as Argentina per year, right? That's electricity consumption.
I heard that. That's why Elon Musk dropped out of it. He was taking Bitcoin payment for Tesla, and then he's like, holy shit, I had no idea that how bad the farming was to it. Well, I did have a question for you. Go ahead.
No, shoot. I was kind of continuing on my tangent, which we could well and truly leave behind.
All right.
That's all good.
I don't want you to give away any secrets, but like, let's stick with St. Martin. If you were going to go there, would you use existing containers there? Can you ship your stuff? Would you buy stuff locally? Like, how difficult is the kit to find, I guess, is what I'm just... And if this is too, like, hits too close to home, as in industry trade secrets, then don't worry about it. I'm just curious, like, I don't know. How hard is it set up?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's no secret sauce here, right? Like, I'm not trying to hide anything, because at the end of the day, this is an open world. And I think, you know, there's that famous saying, there's nothing new under the sun, right? It's not what you do, but how it's done. And I think that's such an important thing, right? So these things are modular. You know, you can get a shipping container anywhere in the world, right? So that's why these things are built in shipping containers. So there's kind of the answer to one of your questions. The important thing is it's who wants what and where are they? You know, and we're only going to know that by getting this stuff and trying it, getting it to you, and getting the feedback. So. You know, we're here to grow that out as desired and as the feedback kind of points to.
How do shipping containers compare to, because some of the videos I saw had these they had to have been like 4 or 5 story high industrial kind of grow rooms, and they were all automated and pretty impressive. I mean, it really looked like some sort of futuristic movie. We can all see the pros and cons immediately to some of them, but I'd rather hear it from you. The differences between containers versus massive grow houses.
It's a good point, right? Because those big grow houses, they're what initially inspired me. Because they're supplying to supermarkets that feed the world, right? You know, I'm trying to feed a small group of people some specific stuff. So my impact on the planet, you know, although it will be good, and everything is a positive, comparing it to feeding, you know, hundreds of thousands of people with a certain produce, a certain crop, that's where the real change is going to happen, I think, in the world and everything that's being produced. So, you know, and that's going to be things that are used on mass consumption, household favorites, right? Your basil and your whatever it is that people use regularly in their food. That's the stuff. And I think they focus on that, which, you know, I look at these things and I just, like you said, it's like the Matrix or something, right? It's like,
yeah,
it's like some futuristic thing. And you're like, multi-stories high, they're vast and they can produce shed loads, because if you're dealing with big chains, you've got competition, and the biggest challenge is price. And I think like you said, profitability massively stifles innovation, because, you know, big contracts win, unfortunately,
government subsidies, all that shit, man, that's been in place for 30 years, it's hard to break through that.
Well, in my previous world, when I said I was working in sort of currency management, there was a few businesses I worked with, and I don't know, let's say they were turning over 20 million, and, you know, their finance directors would tell me that, you know, the majority of our contracts are just profitable, and our biggest contract is actually not profitable, but it's the scale that allows us to produce at mass that makes the rest of the stuff balance and allows us to kind of produce, right? So if you go to get a contract with a big supermarket, they're going to squeeze you for the right price. And somebody might come in because they've got a big contract with a big supermarket and say, we'll take it at a loss, or, like, you know, very minimum profitability. And I think that's been the big challenge. So that's why you see these giant units that have to produce so much so they can fill that gap, right, and be profitable while doing so. Otherwise, it just, what would it be, a money pit, and that would eventually die, I think. So yeah, that's the difference in my opinion.
I'm gonna, because of this interview with you, which is, I find fascinating, I'm gonna pay so much more attention to the vertical growing space, because even the stuff I watched last night was interesting, and the pros and cons of it, and just the idea of having massive, as you say, vast sources of food right next to the Waitrose, right next to the supermarket, could literally be right there. It could be their own brand. And there's, I don't know. Then add that to restaurants, add that to schools, add that to homes. It just, it makes a lot of sense. And it just takes, it seems like that it would naturally just take so much strain off the planet.
Yeah, there's
try something else. It's not working now.
There's a real cool company in Berlin. I can't remember the name of it. They're one of these mass, you know, giant places, but they've set up kind of things like this in supermarkets as well. So it's growing, and you can go in there and cut it yourself, which is awesome. And I think, you know, one of the things that I didn't really go into, which is maybe a bit of secret sauce, but I think it's just awesome to talk about anyway, because I find it interesting, is like I'll talk about pea shoots again, right? Pea shoots. You can cut them and they can grow back sort of 4 or 5 times, often on the second cycle, and the taste is a bit stronger as well. So because the plant gets more resilient, it gets stronger, it grows back stronger typically after you cut it. And that's got a maximum cycle, but, you know, if you can take one seed and cut it 3 or 4 times, and the taste be as good, if not better, you know, where's the optimum state? Where can that be? And how can we push those boundaries to really maximize that, you know, evolution and the value out of one individual seed, right? Because then we're like, we're really talking about optimizing that thing. So, yeah.
I think that's, I've never even would have thought about how sustainable that is. So many questions are going through my mind while I'm having this conversation, but just to be able to reuse the same plant over and over, the cost of replanting and regrowing that it is built into, I guess, the soil economy of farming as it is now. And I think we touched on it briefly, but not really. Like, what's food going to be without pesticides and herbicides? Like, how much better is that? How much less ass cancer is the world going to get, you know, like without these, these huge, like, you know, lobbyist buyouts, like, oh yeah, well, here you go, Senator so-and-so, make that shit go away, because that's definitely true. We sell ass cancer for $5 and we don't give a shit, and now neither do you, you know, like, sorry to be a little conspiracy theorist, but bad, man. And so the idea of, I mean, the only thing that can get manipulated is the seed and whatever you're atomizing the water with, but you know, that could get nefarious at some point. Like, that's the thing. It's always a slippery slope. And this isn't you, or it's just humanity. It's after a while, cut costs, cut costs, cut costs, cut costs, and maximize profit, unlimited growth, and shit gets corrupted, man. It's so annoying.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned earlier about, you know, you always have to wash your salads, right? Is that, what are you washing off?
Right.
You know, because there's no soil, there's no pesticides, there's no above environment that isn't controlled. So we're in a completely secure space. You know, we've got fridge locks on the doors, you know, we've got strip curtains to separate it just in here, because this is R&D, right? But at the bigger grow units, it's all kind of vacuum locked. So there's no environment on the top, it's just underneath where the seeds hang. Where the roots hang, that are getting misted. You know, when we harvest, we're fully sanitized, we're obviously food and hygiene certificated. We cut this stuff, we box it, and then it's sealed. So there's no contact with anything technically. You know, you want to wash it as good practice, I get that, right? But you said if you don't, or you do, whichever lasts longer, right? If we can get it and we know exactly where it's come from, maybe it eliminates the needing to wash it. Again, getting super environmental, that's saving some water, but maybe it's making your stuff last longer. Maybe it's keeping the taste. I don't know. This is where we're at.
This is where we're at. And these are all things that need to be explored. The idea of not washing something to me is absurd, but then I'm like, well, what if that's just habitual? What if that's just pre-programmed in me? Because normally there's pesticides, feces, just things on lettuce that I don't want to, you know, put in my mouth. But if they never had that touch in the first place, ever.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I'm in, man. Yeah. I'm in. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to douse shit in water if I don't have to. It just never helps. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where we're exploring that, because, you know, like you said, it's preconditioned, man. Like, it's, you know, just imagine if you walked around in gloves all day and then you took them off and started cooking food, you'd still wash your hands, right? But it's, you know, like, where's the line, and how can we prove that? And, you know, that's kind of something on our side. But interesting topics for sure.
I just, like I said, I'm going to be paying attention to this space, as they say. Because I think the evolution of this is going to be amazing to watch, especially as a chef. And I've been cooking food for, you know, for almost 30 years. Like, and I have my own timeline in my head of the evolution of food, horticulture, fine dining, and chuck this on at the end. I think it's pretty cool. I'm definitely going to keep paying attention to this. Yeah.
Awesome. So I was just muting my headphones then, because it's doing a cycle. It it cycles the water out, so it changes it. It drains it back down, recycles it, flushes it back up. So it does a water change periodically, so there's no sitting water. That's what the noise is.
That's awesome. That's great, man. Well, it's been an hour, and I usually try to keep these around there.
Wow.
Yeah, it flies. Yeah, there's so much more to talk about too. Maybe let's do I'd love to do like in 6 months, like get maybe like gearing up for the winter season, have you on again and just see what, like, how did it go with the local restaurants? How did it go with the yacht chefs and like logistics? What provisioners have you paired off with and things like that? I'm in, man. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's awesome.
No worries. And look, thanks for giving me the opportunity as well. You know, I'm conscious that you all work with a lot of different people, and there's a lot of people that are really deserving of this time. I'm glad you've given me the opportunity to talk about this. Hopefully through this, I can meet some larger network that can involve themselves in this next stage of testing. I'll provide my details if anybody wants to contact me directly. And we'll kind of look for that next step. I look forward to coming back.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm excited for you. I love the there's levels of this that I'm excited about. There's many different levels that are just like the environment, just good for me to have cool shit that I want on board when I have guests on board. A whole new system of farming for humanity, perhaps, that now I know someone that's in it and I can have a vested interest in it other than my career. But awesome stuff, man. Thanks for coming on, Jamie. I appreciate it.
Hey, no worries. Good to chat with you, man.
All right, we'll see you next time. Definitely come back on Get the Fork Out. We'll see you in a few months, buddy.